So often when I travel, I'll wear my collar, and it attracts good and odd alike when you're in an airport with a Roman collar on. I hear a lot of confessions in airports, by the way. I really do. And but also, people come up and, you know, they talk to you, whatever, and about all kinds of various things. Not too long ago, I was on a flight out west, and I had my collar on. I was sitting in the seat, and along came a guy who was looking for his seat, and he saw that his seat was right beside mine, and his shoulders sort of sagged. And I thought, okay, this is going to be interesting. So we sat there, and of course, on a long flight, sooner or later, you got to talk. And he said, "I suppose you're going to ask me if I'm a Catholic." And I said, "Well, I wasn't going to ask you, but are you a Catholic?" "I used to be," he said. I said, "Oh, okay." So we went on about this and that. And then he said, "I suppose you're going to ask me why I'm no longer a Catholic." And I said, "Well, I wasn't going to, but if you want me to, okay, I will." And so I did. And then he proceeded to tell me in detail his problems with God, the church, and people who consider themselves to be Christians. And I said, "You're blaming God for an awful lot. You're blaming people in the church for an awful lot. And you're blaming the church for an awful lot." I said, "You know, maybe you should realize that God isn't responsible for everything that everybody does. That's why we call sin, you know, that people don't cooperate with God. And that people actually, maybe you're going against God." And I said, "Maybe some of the fault's yours too," because he couldn't get away from me, so it didn't matter. And you say to yourself, now what's the point of that? Or that's just a situation for a priest, but it's your situation too. It is. It's your situation too. Like it or not, when people are baptized, we make the sign of the cross, remember, on their foreheads at the very door of the church, and we anoint them again and again with chrism, etc., and they're meant to be seen as believers. How many times have I heard people say, "Oh, you bunch of hypocrites, that's all it is, a bunch of hypocrites in the church." And you've heard me say before that my response to them is, "Yeah, we are, we're hypocrites, we all stand up at the front. And it's only the priest that has to do it in a microphone to talk about how we're all sinners." But then we ask help to be able to rise above that sin. So I said, "Yeah, we're all hypocrites and there's room for you too." Because all of us struggle. But for today, we have to be able to see what people are struggling with. As Patty read in the second reading, "Now I am speaking to you Gentiles." He's not speaking to you. He said, "Now I am speaking to you Gentiles." That is, you people who are not yet aware of the faith, not yet aware of the message of Christ. And St. Paul, because this is the letter to the Romans, is really clear that he's speaking to this whole mixed up bunch of people. You know, the people of Rome, come on. The people in this, you know, city that was the greatest imperial power that the world had ever seen. And yet also every mix and match of people from across the known world had come to Rome, including Paul. And so it's a diverse bunch he's speaking to, but he's saying, "Look, I am doing this so that I can speak to all of the world, to all of the world." And we're called to speak to all of the world as well. The same thing is true even in the first reading. "And the foreigners who join themselves to the Lord to minister to him, to love the name of the Lord, and to be his servants," and it goes on with very few conditions, "these I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer, and their burnt offerings and their sacrifices will be accepted, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples." But it's hard to speak to all peoples. Paul must have had quite a time there to speak to all the peoples. And you know, we'd like to only speak to those of our own house. My mission, Jesus said, is to speak to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Because I sort of know them, and maybe I can figure them out. Or maybe you can't. Some of the hardest people to try to speak to are the people you know, isn't that true? How do you crack it? And we have a relationship with those people, sometimes a wonderful relationship, and sometimes a relationship with history. Isn't that true? I've got a family too. And you have too. And you have friends and the rest of it. It may be good or not so good, or it may vary in between. If we are really called to speak to all the peoples, to all the Gentiles, we have to know something about all those peoples and all those Gentiles. I would say that they break down into several categories. One is the antagonistic, and I mean antagonistic. It isn't just people with a Roman collar on that see this. "You Catholics, you believers, you this, you that. You know, you're responsible for this, that, etc. Somebody said one time, you're responsible for all the problems of the Crusades. I said, really? How many Crusades were there? You know, and he said, well, it's something I saw on television. I said, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I guess so. But generally, I find that people are not so upset about historical problems as they are because they themselves have been hurt. If you're that angry, if you're that hostile, it's generally because I've been hurt. That's why. And I'm going to act out that hurt. That's not surprising. I'm not up here to practice Sunday morning psychology with you. But you see what I mean. And we're called then to be able to reach those people not so much with the mind as with the heart. And heart shall speak unto heart and the roar of the waters, as it says in a translation of the Psalms. It means that there has to be a real healing. And one of the great ministries of Jesus Christ was to heal those who were sick, heal those who were wounded. Here in the gospel today, we see that. We see that as a sign of his own ministry that he went out to heal. And because we too are called to be part of the body of Christ, we too are called to try to heal and to reach out in that ministry of healing. And it takes time. Everybody here has been in the emergency room. And wouldn't it be lovely to just pop in, pop out, and get an automatic healing? But it doesn't work that way. We are called to be in that ministry of healing, that apostolate of healing, which takes time to be able to know, to diagnose, to give a prognosis, and then to be part of that healing medication which can soothe, heal, and restore the soul. And you do get those people who are indifferent. People say, oh, I don't know, you believe what you believe and I'll believe what I believe. And I say, okay, what do you believe? What really makes you get up in the morning? What makes you the person you are? And the only way that people are going to be able to explain that or share that is if we're interested in them. We have to be able to be interested in them because we have to show that we are not indifferent to them. One of the things that John Paul II said in his long papacy was, we have to be those people that will come to know the world so that the world can be able to know Christ through us. To know the world, not just the world, you and me and that person there. It means that we are called not to be indifferent to them, to be able to give of that, unfortunately, scarce currency, our time, our interest, and our ability to open oneself so that people can open themselves to us. We're also called to be able to remember that people are confused and mistaken. How often when we're doing an RCIA course or when I'm speaking to various people in my work, people say, well, you Catholics believe this. I say, well, no, we don't. Or we'll say, well, you know, Catholics believe this or believe this. And they say, do you really? And very often, people are just, in the true sense, ignorant or confused or mistaken. One of the great works, the spiritual works of mercy, is to instruct the ignorant. It's to say, this is what we believe, and this is why we believe what we believe. That takes work on our part. It really does. It means that we have to know a person to say to that person, well, what do you think? What do you believe? And thereby to be able not just to slam them down, you know, but instead to be able to open our minds and their minds to the action of Christ who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And then you get those people that really are neutral. They haven't thought about it. We've got a great number of pagans in our society. They're nice pagans, but they're pagans. And you see it a lot when people will come for funerals. And people under the age of 25 just don't know how to say they are Father. They've never been instructed. They've never been taught. Because of the sloth of their parents, because of parents assuming that other people are going to do it, or because of their own confusion, their own difficulties, etc. They've never instructed their children, now their adult children, in anything to do with any faith or religion whatsoever. One of the cheapest outs I've ever seen with people is when they say, I'm going to let my children decide what they're going to believe. And they never bring anything in front of them to actually believe in any ordered fashion. They don't do that in anything else. I've often said when people are around saying that to me, and I can actually say it in a way that isn't antagonistic, I'll say, you know what? I'm going to let my children choose whatever sports they want, but I'm never going to take them to an arena. I'm going to let my children choose whatever they want to do, but I'm not going to buy them skis. I'm not going to show them what a tennis court is or anything else. So when one sees the illogic of that, people sort of sit back and they say, well, they'll just have to find it on their own. I said, you're right. So we'll shut down the arenas and the tennis courts and all the rest of it and the swimming pools because, you know, go down to that dock and find out how to swim yourself. The difficulty, of course, is that those people who don't have the benefit of being instructed are to some degree neutral, which means that the natural directions, the natural yearnings, the natural directions of the heart are such that they are ready to be able to hear the word of the Lord, even if at times it seems utterly strange to them. We think it's normal. You're here on a Sunday morning, so you think it's normal. It's part of who we are. It's part of the air we breathe. But for them, it's exotic and strange. And we have to be able to recognize that it is exotic and strange and to start from the ground up with about what it is that everyone will look for. What does every heart yearn for? What do you seek? What are you looking for? What is your life about? And those are the questions that I think all of us can be able to ask those people who are put into our path. Second last, we have those people that are ready, in a way, because their questioning leads them to understand their needs. And the Canaanite woman, people that were driven out of the Holy Land, the Canaanite woman came before Jesus and pleaded for her daughter. They needed something. And in her desperation, in her maternal affection, she was ready to be able to receive what? She didn't know. But she knows she needed something, not just for herself, but for her own daughter. People are in need. That's not taking advantage of their need to be able to speak to them. Instead, it's being able to answer their need with the great answer to all the needs of humanity, Jesus Christ himself. And then there are those who, through circumstances and the very grace of God, are ready to hear that which we have ourselves. And then we're called to be able to share what we have, not in a way that's going to be restrictive, but in a way that speaks regardless of whatever path has led them to that point, so that all people can come to that holy mountain to be fed with the Eucharist, to be able to have their hearts and their minds expanded with the certainty of the power of the Word of God, and to be able to live that life of faith which brings the fullness of human and spiritual fulfillment.